I would like to introduce our drum roll main speaker for this evening, Shirley M. from Escondido.
This is a routine. They always have to do this. Hi, I'm Shirley, and I'm an alcoholic. This podium's perfect. I went to one meeting recently, and the podium was up to here. I could see the back three rows. And another meeting, some women made me a footstool because I, you know, it was like some kind of milk cart, and they put another thing inside of it, and I kept it. I actually thought about throwing it in the trunk of Ski's car tonight just in case. Anyway, perfect. I love that you have such a wonderful large group of hearing impaired people here. We have, my home group is the Thursday night AA workshop in Carlsbad, and we always have an interpreter there. And some of the men that are here I have seen at our group, and it's very nice to see you all again. And thank you for coming and driving me tonight, Ski. He is one of the funniest people I know. If he could just clean up his mouth. I mean, it just, you know. I mean, we come here because we're sick people trying to get well. Not like I thought. I was a bad person, and damn it, I'm going to get good. That's not it. So it's, and I have peppered pitches with the F word a lot. But I'm not that angry anymore. And so it's just not always necessary. And we just come here to get well. And I suppose that's part of it. Now, if we're in a private conversation, don't be surprised. Anything can happen. I got sober on September 26, coming up next month, 1971. And I was too much shy of 40, so I'm older than dirt now. And this is perfect because I can lean on this. I could not stand 45 minutes on my own anymore. I've had a busload of extremely wonderful women sponsors that have spoon-fed me this program. And right now my sponsor, Carol M., has been my sponsor for about 3 years, and she's absolutely perfect for me. As if you don't feel your sponsor's perfect for you, go look somewhere else or listen and find somebody that you can really identify with and yet want to be more like. I've been sober, obviously, a long time now. I'll have 48 years next month, but my perspective on me is quite challenging. My perspective on you, I got it made. You know, I mean, I sponsor a lot of women. That's my life in AA today. But I can't sponsor myself. I cannot see myself as I need to be seen. I am historically a wonderfully subtle con. And I can con myself very easily. So when I was about 15, I think, I have an older sister. She's 10 years older and 2 feet taller, and she was a model, you know, and I've always been a little short person. But I just idolized her, and I have always had this rather pathetic observation of my life, which gave me license to drink. And that was, you know, my mother wanted my sister. she really did not want another child. And but they had an argument or something, my mom and dad. She threw a glass of milk in his face. You know, I mean, it was just, and I am the product of that reconciliation. And I'm really glad they reconciled, because I love life, I enjoy life now, and I was really sort of a crazy person trying to get to where I am today. And so I was born and raised in Santa Monica, so I'm a native Californian, and I loved growing up in that town. I mean, you know, we were at the beach all summer long, and just had... You know, it was really hard. My first husband and I moved to the San Fernando Valley, you know, and I thought I'd been condemned to die. And now I live in Escondido, and I have been condemned to die. Whatever. Anyway, I don't think anybody's just this. You know, we have this in our life. Like, I'm very shy, but not really. I don't know. Why did I say that? That's not true. I'm not really shy. But very self-centered and self-conscious, I think, is what I am, rather than shy. And I was very nervous about your thinking about me. And of course, I had no idea you weren't, you know? I mean, I was thinking about me all the time, so of course I'm concerned about what you're thinking about me, you know? What else is there to think about? And in that horrible self-centeredness, and, you know, I'm very uptight, the way it manifested for me is that I used to perspire. Just, you know, like a guy person, really, on a football workout, you know. I mean, I'd be sweat from elbow to waist, you know. And I'm young, you know, in middle school and starting high school. And it really is not cool to have sweaty armpits, you know. And so my arms are down here, you know, squishing around them. And I had a drink of my mother's blackberry wine, and damn if my armpits didn't dry up, you know. And that is the first thing that alcohol did for me, which I could not do for myself. So, of course, I was engaged with alcohol immediately. And you know, there the significant things of my childhood then were that... I wasn't real close to my mother. I had just an incredible father, little Swedish guy. He had been a teacher in Kansas, and when they immigrated out here to California, he began selling used cars, which my mother thought was way below her position in life. But and my father died of a brain hemorrhage when he was only 56, and I was 11. And it just was devastating to me, because he was my comfort. He would take me, you know, he used to have cars that had rumble seats. Anybody but me remember what a rumble seat was? And he'd bring those cars home and open up the rumble seat, and I'd just be one smart chick driving around Santa Monica in a rumble seat, you know. And so my father died, and, you know, I wasn't allowed to talk about him. My mother was angry at him for dying. They were about to buy a home in a nicer section of Santa Monica. And my mother made the decision not to go through that, you know, and she blamed him. But what I remember a lot about my mother is that I did try. I really am a social person, and I guess I always tried to be like that. And I would try to talk with my mother's friends, and she would do this, you know, like down. That's how I felt, that I was always behind her and like down. And, you know, you don't really know how those things, how they begin to live in you and to stay with you. And when I was 15 and I started that drinking, you know, all those senses or all those, I mean, I don't even know and if those things lived within my consciousness until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and had to expose them all. For why was I such an angry woman with absolutely no self-worth, none. So anyway, then the other thing that happened was what I had found. My mother did put me in a ballet class when I was about 7, and I loved ballet. I just loved it, and it gave me the freedom of spirit that nothing else in my life did. And one day, and the instructor had taken me on and was sort of mentoring me, and she would let me help her with her, you know, elementary classes, and she'd open up the studio for me to practice in when she'd be gone. And I was doing that one day, and I did this arabesque, which is an extension of your leg behind your back. And I heard this loud click and felt this just excruciating pain, you know. And I limped out to a couch in the foyer, and I actually almost could not walk. And the upshot of that was one of my vertebrae in my lower lumbar area had slipped, had broken and slipped behind another one. And so within, you know, a reasonably short period of time, I had a spinal fusion. Now, I was 14 when that happened, and they took, in those days, they didn't do it like today. They took bone out of my right hip, and they packed it into my spine. And it was an incredibly successful surgery. When you have a fusion like that, or whether it's like that now, I don't know, they sever all the nerves across your back. And for a brief time, I was paralyzed, totally paralyzed. But I was only 14 years old. So when these particularly wonderful surgeons put all those nerves back together again, by the end of the day, I could wiggle my toes again. And truly, for the next 65 years, I had pretty good mobility. And I, you know, I didn't take up, I took up tap dancing, but not until a lot of years later, you know. But I mean, I've always loved music and dancing, and there's a great freedom to whatever your spirit finds in this world. I think for you, it must be comedy is where your spirit finds its total happiness, Pam. Wonderful to find something that like that for yourself and to live there with it. So then I married my high school sweetheart. We decided at 16 we'd get married and have 4 kids. And you make some wild decisions at 16, which we carried out at 21 and 22. And, you know, we had 4 kids, and it lasted about 17 years. I was in my bathroom yelling inside my head, "Get out of here, I hate you." And he did. But, so the other thing Santa Monica people do is they play tennis. So we took up tennis. And I looked good in a tennis outfit. I have ballet legs, and I had sort of a good boob at that time. And, you know, I love shagging balls, you know. You stick your little behind out there and your little short, lacy pants. And my husband looked like, I don't know, he looked like a clown. He looked like Groucho Marx on a tennis court. It was embarrassing. But my tennis instructor was really cute on the courts. And he was sort of cute off the courts, too. And, I mean, I'd always been very faithful to my husband. But then I forgot a little part. I had a fifth pregnancy, and it was beginning to be very difficult with my back to be pregnant. And so a group of physicians determined that that pregnancy should be terminated and my tubes tied, and that was done. And so that's when the tennis instructor crossed my line of vision, and my life took on a new dimension. My husband and I had property up in the Santa Monica Mountains, and he had a big car, and we met up there every day in the afternoon. I thought it was heaven. I can remember driving home, clicking my wedding ring on the steering wheel, singing about how happy I am, you know. And my the first week or so this happened, my husband brought me flowers, and I'm like, holy shit, you know. Oh, excuse me. See what an influence you are on me? I don't influence you a bit. Anyway, it wasn't me he was concerned about. So our tennis club had a lot of parties, and it just all got so mixed up. Couples weren't dancing with couples, you know, and they were playing with other people off the court, you know, and my best friend and my husband and my other best friend and her husband and me. Anyway, it was just so, you know, we were in our mid-30s. You talk about a midlife crisis. I mean, we were like, and so, of course, he wanted a divorce. And, you know, I had wanted a divorce, but I did not have the courage to think about having those four children by myself. I mean, he was a reasonably good father. Always said no to everything the kids wanted, but he was helpful. I didn't know how I could do it, and I didn't believe I could do it until I was thrust in that position, and I kept telling myself, I can't do this, I can't do this. For the next 2 years, so I drank my head off. They got married a week after our divorce was final. So I had this thing going inside of me that when I came here, you said it was a resentment, and I had a huge one. One of my ex-in-laws asked me to a party one night, and we went to this party. I didn't think I drank very much at all, but he started calling me, and he had come to Alcoholics Anonymous. He was going through a divorce, and he said, it's really helping me. Maybe you'd like to go. Are you kidding? You know, I've just got a new gallon of wine. I'm not going anywhere, you know. And until that night, you know, I started getting really, really neurotic. I mean, I couldn't swallow pills, you know. I thought I had throat cancer, you know. I had everything. I had brain cancer. I had everything. If I heard it on the news, I had it, you know. And these kids, after their dad left, they were the powerless people in my life that people like me take advantage of, you know. I couldn't stand up to anybody my own size or of my own person, and I took out all my resentment and bad feelings on those children. I have girl, boy. And the youngest kid didn't really get as much flack as he got. Nothing. Just didn't pay any attention to him. And, that went on for 2 years. One of them, the oldest girl, had this cat, and they called her Mama Kitty, and she hated me. She just hated me. And she used to come and sit in front of me, and she'd meow, 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 and I'd put my foot between her two front legs, and I'd rock her, and I'd whip her across the room, She'd come back, meow, meow, meow. I told the kids, I'm getting rid of this damn cat, And so my sister-in-law came to visit, and I said, oh, good, you can come with me. I could not drive. I was paranoid to drive. I had a little job, and I had a path. I could drive one way. I could not make left-hand turns. I never sat at a signal and made a left-hand turn. You have to think when you're sitting in those things, and it's not good or safe for you or anybody around you. So I went everywhere making right-hand turns. Takes longer, but it's doable. And so I asked her if she'd go with me to take the cat. Now, the cat had a litter, and so we took them all to the vet, and the vet said, I like the little kittens. I can get homes for them. Don't want the mother cat. Nobody wants her. And I'm like, you're right. But I had to put her back in the car. So I lived in the West Valley in Woodland Hills, and I'm driving, and I'm like thinking, I am not taking this cat home. So I pulled over to the curb, and I threw the cat out of the car and drove home, told the kid, vet took the cat, so got back to my drinking, and Mike kept calling, and one night, you know how you have those two-a-day drunks? You get up, and you get drunk in the morning, and then something happens, and you sort of take a little nappy or pass out, whichever is appropriate, and you get up and start all over again, and I went into my mirror. I cried a lot. I cried all the time. I felt so sorry for myself. And I was smart enough to know if I kept crying this much, I would dehydrate. That's how really brilliant I was, So, drank a lot of wine. So I'm in my bathroom. It's a big bathroom with two sinks because it's supposed to be for two people, and pathetically. And I looked in the mirror, and I'm talking to the mirror like, what happened? And the mirror said, Shirley, if you don't stop drinking, nothing is going to change for you. I'm like, what? And I, honest to God, I went to the telephone and I called Mike, and I said, okay, I'll go. He said, just don't drink tomorrow morning, and or tomorrow I'll pick you up. We'll go to Monday night meeting in Venice. And that was September 26, 1971. And I've not had another drink since that very first meeting. And I didn't identify with your drinking. I don't think I'm the only one that has felt like this. I felt like the worst alcoholic possibly you've ever known. Because of the way my self-centered feelings about me. Nobody's worse drunk than I am. Until you get in here and then you hear a few people talking, you think, holy gosh, I need to drink some more, but I didn't. And I identified with the two women that spoke that night. They talked about how they'd take a shower, get out, and put fresh clothes on, and within 10 minutes they were sweating the alcohol out of their body, smelling just as bad, if not worse, than when they got in the shower. And that happened to me time and time again. You know, I mean, they had the same kind of restrictions, the same kind of self-loathing that I had. And that's what attracted me to this program. So Mike took me to meetings, the first four meetings I went to. I went to a meeting one night, and this guy, Sam Hardy, from the desert was speaking, and he'd been in prison for murder, and I'd never met a murderer before, and I thought, my mother's not going to approve this, you know, I'm with a murderer. My mother had died 2 years before, propped up in a sanitarium of a wet brain. So she wasn't going to judge me too harshly. But and then I wanted to go on a Saturday night. It was a meeting in Woodland Hills, and I was afraid to drive. So I asked my oldest daughter, Dana, if she would indeed go with me. And I asked her, but I mean, I really told her, you're coming with me. And so we go to this meeting in Woodland Hills, and I can't sit up in a room. I'm actually sitting on a side wall, and the door is sort of like right across from us, catty corner to us. And we're sitting with my back to the wall, Dana's back to the wall, and this cat comes to the door. And this cat walks across a little bit of way there and jumps up on my lap. And I'm like, you know, my daughter, Mom, it's Mama Kitty. And I'm like, shit. And the guy from the meeting comes out, oh, you're meeting our meeting cat. Cat comes here every week. You know? And I'm like, oh, my God. And, you know, when my head cleared a little bit, I realized that's where I had dumped the cat off, right at the side of that church. And she must have been living across the street. She was all clean and fluffy. And I started going to that meeting every week because I met my first best friend in AA. If you have a best friend in AA, you're solid. Mine was Joni. Joni had been sober for 30 days, for God's sakes. Who stays sober for 30 days? And so she started driving. She wasn't afraid. She wasn't very good at driving. She made bad decisions. She just stopped the car in the middle of the block for no reason, you know. And you know, I'd say, why are we stopping here? And she's like, oh, you know, that was her explanation. And then off we'd go. But and I'd go to that meeting, and I don't know for how many weeks Mama Kitty came. But she came, she'd jump up on my lap, give me a little purr, and off she'd go. And then whenever it was, she stopped coming. And you know, I was speaking one night down at the University of San Diego, and this guy that was probably a heavy-duty pot smoker, you know, he was a sort of happy guy. And he says, I know why Mama Kitty kept coming there. She wanted you to be able to make amends to her. And I thought, that's cool. Okay, that's good for me. And she's sort of my signature story about drinking. So I came here. The other thing I think is pretty nervy and AA is that they ask you not only to not drink, they prefer you not take any pills. And I had a rather strong affection towards Valium. And, you know, it was my get-well pill. If I had the tremors from drinking, Valium took care of it. You know, I felt really mellow. And you told me I couldn't take that. Well, I accepted your advice. However, I carried it with me for 3 years. 3 years. Because I didn't quite have any place to go about a God. I was cussing at God. Now I'm going to come in and ask for his help. You know, what kind of deal would that be? And so I carried it with me, and I had a sponsor tell me, you're either going to get drunk or kill yourself if you don't get rid of that stuff. And so I did. I threw it all down in the toilet. Then I jumped in the toilet and pulled one out. I put it up on the sink, and I thought, are you really going to take that, Shirley? And the answer was no. So I threw that away, too, and unfortunately, nothing happened. I did not see a white light. I did not have a profound experience, and now I've got a God in my life. It just didn't happen. But what happened was I became even more dependent upon you. And for a long time, as Ski had said, the group was his higher power, and you were my higher power too. And you know, I don't know how it's just been over 47 years that I have come to have a power greater than myself in my life in the form that I do today. I don't follow a faith, but I love it when our book talks about the spirit of the universe and the great energy of the universe. And that's what I feel is my power. That and everything I read in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I share with my sponsor, what my sponsor shares with me, what you've given me to share with other women. It's been a long and tedious metamorphosis, but that is what this program does. You know, some people will come up, the problem with having a lot of time, they think you're real, oh, you're so wise. What? I am not wise. But I have had insights now into myself because of the steps I've taken over and over and over again. And then when I share with you what your steps, and you're talking about yourself, and I see me in you, and there's some part of you that's a little bit different than I am, and more, one more little insight is revealed. I'm sure you've all heard Clancy, and we've been fortunate enough, my husband and I, to have had years and years of Clancy when he was much younger. But he explained exactly how I feel about it. Our perceptions change like this, so small, just little tiny increments at a time. In the beginning, I thought that divorce was 100% my fault because I was a screaming, yelling maniac behind my alcohol. I remember my oldest son's wedding was the first time my husband and that ex-best friend were with my husband and me, and somebody told me, he said, geez, I don't remember your mom being so funny. Well, I wasn't funny in that marriage. I was not funny. Nothing was funny to me. And in AA, you've taught me everything, particularly about me. It's pretty funny. I mean, you know, why would I took myself so seriously. Oh, my God. You know, and you've shown me how not to do that. And you've given me insight into myself. Consequently, we get insight to you. You know, I love it. Newcomers come in and we always know just where you are, just what you're doing, how you're feeling, what's going to happen, you know. And sometimes you get sort of irritated by that, but we're not all that different one from the other. We just are not. We are individuals, and yet we have such commonalities. You know, we all struggle with honesty and trying to live right. Oh, I'm going to be done before that, I hope, because you'll be really put away if I talk 10 more minutes. Anyway, I do have to tell you about my husband, Ken. He's home with knee surgery. Ken's 6'3", and when I first started going with him, I was 5'2", and I wore 3-inch heels, you know, so we didn't look all that ridiculous together, but I've shrunk 4.5 inches. He has shrunk a bit, but he works out 3 or 4 hours a day. I love it because he's gone, and I like it when he comes home too, but I love it when he goes. We've been married for 40 years. 40. Did you hear that? 40. You learn a lot about yourself and about somebody else, you know. I had a friend one time said, "You got to leave him." And, you know, it was that period in a relationship that was hard. And I knew I wasn't going to leave him. And I'm so glad I didn't, because, you know, we learned something in that period of our relationship. And our relationship just grew through it. My husband lost, he had 3 daughters. And the oldest one was hit running in Carlsbad, which is a real running community. And she made the front page of our paper. And she was running on the run side of the street. The car swerved and came up behind her and killed her. And we were up in Northern California with my younger daughter. And we had to drive home that day with that news in his heart. And it was just, you know, the obvious nightmare. I'm sure there are other people in this room that have lost children. And I don't know about your experience, but for Ken and for me, this program is what saved us. Being with you, being able to share with you. Some of you will share back. Some of you will just continue to share your own problems and take us out of ourselves. We had a book that another woman I sponsor gave me, because 8 months before Nikki died, her son died of an overdose. And no matter what you go through in life, just life happenings, there are people here in Alcoholics Anonymous to help you through those times, good and bad. Don't you hate it when they say you're in a good time and they say, "Well, this too shall pass." But when you're not in such a hot time and they say, "This too shall pass," it gives you a lot of hope. And that's the thing that brought me here. The first thing I heard from you was hope. So I hope you all stay sober. I suppose not everybody in this room will. But I'll tell you, if you jump more than one day at a time, your chances diminish. But if you'll stay with it one day at a time, if Steve can stay sober 30 whatever years, you can stay sober too. So thank you for letting me share here with you.